Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Today on Edgewise, we have Mark Royal and Tom Agnew, leaders at the Hay Group Employee Research Division. Mark holds PhD and MA degrees in sociology from Stanford University, and Tom received his PhD in management from Vanderbilt University and MBA from the University of Saskatchewan. They're co-authors of the new book, Enemy of Engagement. Gentlemen, welcome to Edgewise.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Mark, what is the enemy of engagement?
We're talking about people who are aligned with and committed to organizational goals, but are held back in achieving those objectives by either the roles in which they find themselves or the work environments mm-hmm. that surround them. Mm-hmm. Many organizations have been focused on the concept of employee engagement for a number of good reasons. The concept has been well researched, and it's been consistently linked to more positive outcomes for organizations, from productivity to enhanced business results. It's all about encouraging a level of commitment to an organization, an identification with goals and objectives, an attachment to the organization, as well as a willingness on the part of employees to contribute extra discretionary efforts. In working with organizations that have been engagement-focused, though, mm-hmm. we've encountered many that have been successful in building high levels of motivation, but cases where organizations are still struggling with performance issues. We hear that from managers as well as employees. And just to give an example, we worked with one pharmaceutical organization a number of years ago, very high engagement organization, as our employee survey results had confirmed. But as we reviewed the results in detail with the leadership team, we saw in the employee survey results some troubling signs coming from middle managers. Mm-hmm. And we were asked to do a series of interviews to understand what some of the concerns of these individuals might be.
Right.
And we heard to a person affirmation of the commitment to the organization. This is the best company I've ever worked for. I'm excited about what we're doing together, mm-hmm. but. And what followed that but were a series of concerns about getting things done in the organization, broadly mm-hmm. speaking. Mm-hmm. I'm excited about the organization, but I don't understand where my decision-making authority begins and ends. As we've grown, I don't understand the handoffs and interdependencies in the organization. Mm-hmm. I think our parent company is a little too involved in our decision-making, and that slows me and my team down. Mm-hmm. I want to contribute, but I'm not fully able to. And that's led us to the conclusion that to get the most from their teams, managers can't focus solely on motivating employees, the essence of the engagement concept. They also need to ensure that roles and work environments allow employees to channel their extra discretionary efforts productively. The modern emphasis on engaging employees has to be matched with a similar commitment to, in our terms, enabling them.
Right. Tom, anything to add?
What we've seen is that workplace frustration over the last several years, as organizations continually strive to do more with less and have employees do more with less, is becoming even more prevalent in the workplace.
Hmm.
It's something that managers and leaders need to pay attention to now more than ever in order to make sure that the motivation they have isn't being squandered by not providing the right setting for people to be successful.
So just at the moment when corporate culture cries out for a little bit more freedom, not enough companies are doing that.
We've seen consistently in research that among the ways companies get the most out of their people is getting out of their way, mm-hmm. giving people broader latitude in how they go about their job roles, broader decision-making responsibility, mm-hmm. a greater ability to take risks in the organization. And they also, from the standpoint of sustaining or enhancing performance over time, do more to reach out and involve employees mm-hmm. in that conversation, mm-hmm. revisiting work structures and processes as work demands change. So the way work is structured and organized in the organization is conducive to success. And I think there's an opportunity and a trap for organizations. The opportunity, obviously, is if processes are efficient and aligned with objectives, they allow organizations to execute in reliable, repeatable ways over time. But if goals and objectives change, there's a trap. Because if organizations aren't continually revisiting work processes, mm-hmm. now we may be executing, but if we're executing against the old target rather than the new one, we're not driving organizational success. So I think the best organizations are continually revisiting work processes.
Right.
And involving employees in that conversation, the people on the front lines who know those work routines best and are in a strong position to help managers and leaders identify some of the slippage points between routines and the goals and objectives they're meant to serve.
And we're seeing a greater differentiation between those organizations that get it and those that don't. There's a lot of organizations that haven't changed their mindset about how to manage the workforce and what needs to be done to promote better effectiveness of their employees. The organizations we see that are doing the right things in terms of changing the mindsets of their managers and leaders have a significant leg up as we hopefully start getting out of this recession that we're in.
You know, that's a very interesting observation because perhaps older thinking companies are locked into their old thinking, and many of them are in the bomb shelter waiting for the bad times to pass. They keep saying to themselves, as soon as the economy swings up, we're going to be back.
What I think we're seeing out there is this mantra among most organizations of do more with less. And for them, do more with less is let's squeeze more energy out of our employees.
But for us,
do more with less needs to take a different context.
Uh-huh.
Let's change the way we lead our employees and lead the organization so that not only can we get energy out of these people and motivation out of these people, but we can help them be more successful with the energy they have.
Absolutely. We saw amid the depth of the recession, companies leaning heavily on the reservoir of goodwill that comes with a motivated workforce, mm-hmm. asking people to do more and often with less.
Exactly.
Many companies now are realizing that level of energy that perhaps carried them through the toughest of times needs to be revisited before it turns into burnout.
Mm.
That's where enablement becomes a friend of engagement. Mm-hmm. The lack of enablement becomes the enemy of engagement because organizations can't succeed on the force of will of motivated employees forever,
right.
Motivation alone. If organizations aren't thinking about helping people work in reasonable, manageable, efficient, sustainable
sure.
ways, revisiting work processes as work demands change, they're not going to be able to sustain performance as they look ahead to recovery-related growth.
All right, can you talk to us a little bit about how your approaches to engagement might be realized in a project team, or how a very strong and forward-looking project manager or team leader might be able to apply some of this?
Our notion of enablement, for the most part, happens at a very tactical local level, meaning the work group.
Right.
There are a lot of things that obviously, from an organizational perspective, need to occur to have a fully enabled workforce. But many of the obstacles in the workplace that employees are experiencing are very tactical, are very much at the work group level. And so in the book, we focus on providing managers with very specific tools to diagnose lack of enablement within their teams specifically, and then give them some very tactical examples of what they can be doing.
Can you give us an example or two of some of these problems?
One of them is performance management. There's a couple of very key aspects to it that when they aren't happening, lead to a lack of enablement. First is goal clarity. What we need to do as managers is clarify the must-win battles. Just as we're trying to do more with less and adding more and more onto employees, they're getting more and more priorities. They're getting more and more things they're supposed to accomplish. We tend not to take anything off the table. What we really need to do is help prioritize for the employees what they need to accomplish so that they know the most impactful things that they can be doing and focusing energies on.
Mm-hmm.
As an employee, I also need to get more ongoing feedback on how I'm doing in accomplishing those goals. Because if I don't get that constant course correction, then all of a sudden a year goes by and I find out that I missed the mark by a wide margin. Obviously, I haven't accomplished what I'm supposed to accomplish. I haven't helped the organization in the way I'm supposed to have helped them. That's a frustrating situation.
Absolutely. Now, in the book, you talk about enablement. How do you differentiate enablement from empowerment?
Empowerment is one aspect of providing the proper enabling environment. There's two components to enablement. One is optimizing roles for employees.
Right.
We need to make sure that employees bring the proper skills to do their job, but we also have to design the jobs to maximize the use of employees' unique skills and abilities. Oftentimes in the past, we design jobs in a very constrictive way. We need these sorts of skills. Let's go out and find these skills. What we forget about is employees bring a lot of skills and abilities that are outside the scope of the job. And the more that leaders and managers can take advantage of those unique skills and abilities, the more enabling the environment's going to feel for employees. The second one is supportive environment. It's making sure that we facilitate rather than hinder an employee's ability to do their job. We throw up a lot of roadblocks in employees' paths to performance. We need to understand what those roadblocks are and remove them. And we can only do that by engaging and having conversations with employees and trying to understand what we as leaders and managers have done that's preventing them from taking the most effective and efficient path to performance.
So what you're saying is there's the rigid type of work environment versus flexible. Policies, procedures, people being locked into job descriptions versus revisiting job assignments.
Right.
How would you move from rigid to flexible?
A change of that sort may be both cultural and tactical.
Changing culture is a huge deal, though.
Exactly. There may be aspects of that that are going to involve culture shifts, which would involve making sure that the cultural goals, you know, the ideal versus the real, are well-defined. And then that those cultural values that are articulated are realized in the organization.
Mm-hmm.
So if we want to go from a more rigid to a more flexible structure, we need to make sure that the behavior of leaders and managers throughout the organization reinforces that perspective for employees. Otherwise, the old's going to hang on. The other aspect is making sure that organizational systems are aligned with this new vision of a more flexible and adaptive organization. If performance management systems and collaborative relationships and work structures are still stuck in the old, tightly regimented model, the new cultural value, even if it's being espoused and modeled by leaders, isn't going to take hold.
Right.
The other aspect of it is helping in a more tactical and practical way at local levels, managers working with their teams mm-hmm. bring out a greater degree of empowerment mm-hmm. and helping them to understand why that's important. And to take that notion back to why an empowered or more flexible work environment is conducive to this concept of enablement. If we think about the two components of enablement, there are implications for both.
And what are they?
First, there's greater likelihood that if an individual has unique, perhaps unanticipated competencies, he or she will be able to bring that out in the job role, such that what they're doing on a day-to-day basis takes better advantage of the talents and skills and abilities they can bring. There's more latitude in how an individual goes about a job role. The other aspect of enablement is a supportive work environment.
Right.
For an employee rigidly boxed in by a role, there may be limited degrees of freedom in terms of what he or she can do about that. In a more flexible, more empowering environment, it becomes easier to work with coworkers and their managers to remove those obstacles to create better support levels. So there's a greater problem-solving capability for those individuals motivated, but perhaps held back by their job
role. I was just going to add to that. I think that one of the challenges of this notion of rigid versus flexible and moving from one to the other for senior executives or even managers throughout an organization is that it's often ill-defined what flexible means.
Right.
It requires a real cultural shift, but if we don't understand exactly what we're trying to shift to, of course, we're never going to get there. One of the first things we need to do is define flexible. Flexible doesn't mean everyone, let's go off and do whatever we want to do. It's more freedom within a framework.
Sure.
But we've got to define that framework.
There are constraints.
Absolutely. From an empowerment perspective, which is one of the key drivers of enablement, the important thing is to provide the boundaries of decision-making responsibility.
Right.
We'll refer to that as specific freedom to act.
Right.
The absence of any role boundaries is not necessarily empowering for people. In fact, it can be paralyzing.
Absolutely.
Because I don't know where my decision-making authority begins and ends. So by taking action, I may be overstepping boundaries unknowingly and suffer repercussions. Whereas if you tell me which decisions I'm empowered to make and where I need to consult others, now I know that within the scope of that decision-making authority, which has been clearly defined for me, I truly am empowered to take action. In fact, I know it's expected and that it'll be valued and rewarded.
Right.
Flexibility does not imply a complete absence of work structures and processes.
Exactly. Mark and Tom, in the book, you note that frequently some of the most frustrated employees are the ones that are the most loyal.
We're talking about motivated, dedicated employees who are working towards significant organizational objectives. There's a Buddhist saying that wanting is pain. The implication is that without desiring something, there's no pain in not getting it. And that's true in the workplace as well. Frustration is an emotional response to opposition. The human will is seeking something, but is not able to get what it wants. Frustrated people want to achieve something in the workplace, but they're thwarted in their efforts. And the stronger you want something, the bigger the sense of frustration when you don't get it. So there's a belief in the organization that underlies these people's desire to help it be successful. We're not talking about demotivated people turned off or disengaged. Instead, we're talking about people who are motivated but aren't able to achieve what both they and the organization want them to achieve. In most cases, they're highly committed employees who would like to do the right thing if only the organization would get out of their way. And that's the enemy of engagement.
Absolutely.
The challenge to leaders is, yes, we need to motivate people to drive high levels of performance, but if we're not also paying attention to support for success, we're going to undermine that engagement in terms of the sustainability as well as the impact on organizational performance.
It's a significant issue within organizations. In many organizations, more than 20% of the workforce is frustrated.
Right.
These are people who are motivated to contribute but are being held back. That's a significant portion of the population. And these people tend to be high performers or high potentials. Mm-hmm. Woody Hayes, the old Ohio State football coach, has a saying, there are three things that can happen when you pass and two of them ain't good.
Okay.
And the same thing is true with reactions to frustration. There's going to be a group of employees that problem solve, take a positive approach, and have a breakthrough. So they'll move and become more effective on their own. They'll figure things out. They'll figure ways around.
Right.
Unfortunately, there's going to be negative reactions, and this is typically more the case. You're going to have what we call a breakdown, where people just become demotivated over time. You've taken what was a great positive energy in the organization, and now you have a pool of this lack of energy.
Sure.
You're also going to have what we call a breakaway. You're going to have a lot of people who simply leave the organization,
yeah.
And those are overwhelmingly high potentials and high performers. they leave because working in a frustrating environment is just not consistent with what they want to accomplish. They need to accomplish things. So they'll simply leave for greener pastures and organizations that they can be successful in.
We've been speaking to Mark Royal and Tom Agnew, co-authors of the new book, Enemy of Engagement, published by AMACOM, a division of the American Management Association. Gentlemen, thanks for being with us on Edgewise today.
Thanks for having us.
Follow the American Management Association on Twitter to learn about upcoming free programs, the latest news, management insights, and special offers. You can follow us at AMANET. That's AMANET. Hope to tweet to you real soon. We'd love to get your feedback on today's program. You can either email us at podcast@amanet.org or call 800-697-3406. Your comments may become part of a future program. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.